On the low breakwater, saturated with the salt of the sea and the dark of the night, we stood, sunken, tongueless, taken refuge in ourselves, in fear of ourselves, fatigued, breathtaken, left behind in the salt-lipped darkness of the beach. We listened to the recurring syllables of the waves. In this moment, the shadow of tempest gradually dimmed the mirror of the night. In the proud domain of the night, a voice was heard, which was of neither bird nor of the sea. And the while, a strange boat with dim, inconstant contours anchored, which was a terrifying combination both of a bed and a coffin. It was all command and sway, as if unafraid of the mercurial turbulence of the wave in the sea. Unlike that which it really was, a small boat on the vast sea, it was as a mountain firmly seated on a plain. And on the heart of the ebon night, clear was the insignificance of the command of the dark in comparison to hers, and subtle thus glided along as a coffin carried on a thousand hands. My father called the rower with a voice in which neither hope nor interrogation was reflected, much more of a reply than an address such a call was, though the rower's reply, clear and cutting, was audible from among the humming waves as a command. Therefore the rower set the oar aside, which was more of a scythe than an oar, on the floor of the boat, and without looking at us, thus addressed us, "Solely one, he who is the most fatigued." And the rocks of the coast all around us was submission and silence. And on the inverted bowel, ere the tempest could dim the transparent blue, the conscious calm was so as if since the day of creation no tempting breeze had traversed the cleavages of the horizon. Therefore my father called unto the sailor, "Alas, two are we, and both fatigued, as we have crossed the vastness of the uneven by the zest of our feet. Although we were aware of the ordained destination from the beginning, such awareness could betray nothing but agreement, as we have knowingly acted and insisted, aloof in such degrading and undeserving conflict, as unto the high rampart of a fortress, in siege, resisting undefeatably. Though furthermore we are even intolerant of ourselves, the realm of our prowess was on this devastated beach. Alas, we were consumed in power and prowess in such ruinous war, and now to go to bed with our own bodies as do the outcast prostitutes with their own disgust and sickens us. On such obscure ruin we shall settle nevermore." The sailor thus spoke another time, "Solely one, the most fatigued, thus is the order." And the rag covering his bony shoulders, he pulled up to his head, as if suffering from the fog, which was swelling on the spread of the breathless, rotten sea. At this moment, my look pierced the warp and woof of the darkness and landed on his countenance. His sockets were empty of sphere and look, and drops of blood dripped from his empty dark sockets on his bony cheek, and so were the paws and nails of the crow sitting on the shoulder of the sailor. All around us, on the low coastal breakwater, each cliff was a symbol of resignation and timidity. Another time, my father spoke, and this time, as if addressing himself, "Decrease, lessening, shrinking, waxing." Bewildered was I that a sepoy, a swordsman, could so well measure the carat of the word as they are valuable in speech. And he was thus engaged with himself, shrinking from within, a bowel submerged in you, a well dug in you, a well, and get into yourself and in search of yourself. Yet exactly it is here where the tragedy begins from, to get into oneself and to wander in the realm of the dark and happiness. Alas, 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 itself is another pain in another realm, in between two poles of stupidity and vulgarity. Then a bitter curse ran on his tongue and so cried, although in this pit of the fate no salvation is to be imagined, yet for the winners of the shameful and cheap wars, dawns are a danger, and a great one too. To be known and be a plaything in hand and a watchword and tongue, and the roar of the masses saying, Ecce Vittorio, which though, if not ashamed of the people, what could one do with being ashamed with oneself? Finally, before dawning of the day, should I be saved from such an abyss of horror and disappointment? Then he came back into the boat, which was a terrifying combination of a bed and a coffin, as if unafraid of the mercurial turbulence of the wave and the sea. The spread of the oars were laid against the hips of the sea, and the boat readily glided on the dark sea, subtle and elastic as of a coffin carried on 1,000 hands. I was left lonely and shocked on the low breakwater, all around which each cliff was silence and submission. And in the ever stuffier foggy coast, amassed with the recurring syllable of waves, I earnestly looked at the horrible boat, which could have been likened unto a lost hope, and in furnace was the envy of a mountain on a vast plain, as if unafraid of the mercurial turbulence of the wave in the sea. My father spoke naught unto me, not even in farewell, and not even a seeing off glimpse, as unto a mountain or a fast-seated rock on a high coast. And of the two of us, it was I who passed over the turbulent waters of the sea, not he. And then I was as an anchorless boat, conscious of its eternal homelessness. Again, of such frightening fact that consciousness as a word is the same thing as resignation and submission. In the proud realm of the night, a voice was heard, which was of neither bird nor of the sea, and thus could I feel the fatigue of my race loaded on the lean bones of my frail shoulders.